Well, nodding off is better than throwing rotten tomatoes. So I would just ask the ushers, if you noticed anyone coming in carrying suspicious looking bags or boxes, please. I would also ask people if, during the course of the evening, if someone is suspiciously moving his hand over towards a covered box, please stop them. I do not like rotten tomatoes thrown in my direction. I'd like to begin by asking you a few questions. Behind me here on the platform is a motto. Do any of you know what that motto says or where it comes from? Yes. Can someone tell us, where does it come from? Okay. Why did he give it to the church?
He was dealing in models, and the recipe shows that it was all that the calendar was the house quarter, the last quarter,
Okay, what language is this? Why is there a German motto in this church? Well, tonight we want to reflect on Harold der Vorheit and the role of Raymond Wagler in the Harold der Vorheit. And what is significant here is that he was the German editor of Harold der Vorheit. Another question. How many of you know what this is? How many of you read this when you were younger? Okay, this is the Harold der Vorheit. It was often known as the Kleine Herald or the Klein Herald, as it was called in Pennsylvania Dutch. Harold der Vorheit was the journal that Dad edited. He was named the associate editor in 1945, and he was the editor until 1962. So for over 15 years, his life was associated with the Harold der Vorheit. I want to speak more about it in detail, but want to ask you a few more questions about it. When you were a small child and you read this paper, what part of this paper did you read? How many of you read the German part? Very few. How many of you read the English part? And what did you most enjoy about the English part? What?
Pen pals.
Pen pals, okay. The children's section. The children always wrote letters to the Harold der Vorheit, and they were published. What else did you enjoy?
The questions.
The questions. What questions?
There were two Bible questions in each issue.
Okay. That was in the German part, though. That is right. So you were reading the German part. Good for you. That's wonderful. Okay. What were the printer's pies? Does anyone know? The children should know that because that was an important part of the children's section. What is a printer's pie?
They were mixed up words on the verses.
Yes. And where did they come from?
The Bible.
Well, yes, they were. They were Bible verses, but where did the printer's pies come from? Does anyone know? I could show you this here. See, every 2 weeks, you would get the Herald of Ohrid. The children would immediately turn to the children's section. It was in English, which was a big advantage. And then you would read the letters from the children, and they were looking for pen pals. Does anyone have my birthday so that we can correspond? Now, the printer's pies were a way that you could earn credit. Children would take Bible verses, mix up the letters of each word, and then send those printer pies into the editor, and you would get credit. And this credit was translated into dollars and cents, so that the editor would always say, you received so many pennies credit for the work you did, for sending in a printer's pie or solving a printer's pie. You could get money for sending it in or for solving it. You could also get money or credit for memorizing Bible verses and memorizing verses of hymns. And so this was a very attractive part of the Herald of Ohrid for children. This was all in the English part. And there were other parts to Herald of Ohrid, but before discussing specifically Raymond Wagler's role in the Herald of Ohrid, let's look back at history of the Amish Mennonite Church in America. Let's go back to the 19th century. In 1888, the first Amish Mennonite conference was formed. It was called the Michigan-Indiana Amish Mennonite Conference. This was formed by the so-called Diner Sammlung. That is when the ministers from churches would get together and discuss important issues that were common to all the congregations in the area. In 1888, the Mennonite Indiana Amish Mennonite Conference was formed as a result of these Diner Sammlung. This was called the Michigan-Indiana Conference. In 1890, then, there was the Western Amish Mennonite Conference. That included all the Mennonite congregations west of Indiana, all the way out to Oregon. And then, much later, in 1900, the third Amish Mennonite Conference was formed in Pennsylvania. It was called the Eastern Amish Mennonite Conference. This included the Amish churches in Pennsylvania and Ohio. It was the largest of the conference, even though it was formed the last. So, at the turn of the century, there were three Amish Mennonite conferences. I should also emphasize that the Amish and the Mennonites worked very, very closely together. The Mennonites always viewed the Amish as their brothers and sisters, and vice versa. And this comes out as we look at the Herald of Ohrid and its close ties to Gospel Herald and Youth Christian Companion and other publications by the Mennonite Publishing House. There was essentially no basic difference between the Amish and the Mennonites at that time. And also, at the turn of the century, the concept of Old Order Amish did not exist. There were these Amish Mennonite conferences. Patton Yoder has written a book about this where he discusses the role of the Diner Sammlung in the formation of these conferences. Then, in 1910, there was another conference formed. It was simply called the Conservative Amish Mennonite Conference. Its leaders were found mostly in the Grantsville, Maryland area, although some came from Ohio and Indiana also. This was called the Conservative Amish Mennonite Conference. Today it is still called the Conservative Mennonite Conference. So that was the fourth of these conferences. It was formed in 1910. And the Conservative Conference, which just had its conference meetings several weeks ago, was debating whether it should rid itself of that name, Conservative Mennonite Conference. It narrowly failed to pass. They wanted to change the name to Rosedale Network, I believe, but it did not pass by a very narrow margin. So I say this by way of giving you a historical overview of where the Amish Church fits into Mennonite history. Are there any questions or any corrections? No rotten tomatoes, please.
Yes.
Very good question. The first Mennonite publication, the first Mennonite periodical in America, was called Herald der Wahrheit, but it was a different journal. It was founded by John F. Funk in 1864. It was in both English and German, which indicates that many, many Mennonites in the 19th century, in the middle of the 19th century, were speaking German. That is a fact. Many of you don't know who I am. It's probably just as good. But I live in Russia, and many of the Mennonites who populate central Kansas, western Canada, came from Russia. To be a Mennonite in Russia meant to speak German. If you were a Mennonite in Russia and married a Russian or Ukrainian, you left the church, because the church services were in German. By definition, a Mennonite in Russia was German. It's closely identified with German nationality, too. So John Funk created the first Mennonite periodical in 1864. It lasted until 1901, and there were two versions of Herald der Wahrheit. There was the German version and the English version, Herald of Truth. They were published cooperatively. A lot of it was translation from one to the other. But in 1901, the Mennonite Church discontinued publishing Herald der Wahrheit, continued publishing the Herald of Truth in English. This indicates the acculturation or the evolution that the Mennonite Church had experienced in the last four decades of the 19th century. Then, in 1908, the Herald of Truth was combined with a magazine called Gospel Witness, and they changed the name to Gospel Herald. So in 1908, the Gospel Herald was founded based on the Herald of Truth and the Herald of Wahrheit, which had existed earlier. But Gospel Herald was now published in English only, beginning in 1908, and it became the organ of the Mennonite Church in America in the English language. So does that answer the question? Well, we need to move on now to, did you have a question, or were you just getting ready to throw a tomato? All right, let's look briefly then at the founding of the Herald der Wahrheit. The Herald der Wahrheit was founded in 1912. And I'd like to tell you a few stories about how this magazine was founded, because it's interesting and I think beneficial. And I think it's uplifting. There was an Amish bishop who lived in Excellent, Wisconsin, by the name of Eli J. Bontrager, one of the most outstanding bishops in the Amish church. In 1912, we still can't really speak about the Old Order Amish, although in German, in the Herald der Wahrheit, they referred to themselves as the Alt-Amische Mennoniten, the Old Amish Mennonites. That term is frequently used if you read the Herald der Wahrheit of the first years of its existence. Eli J. Bontrager, from Excellent, Wisconsin, met in his father's house a man named Hansi Bontrager with several other people who were concerned about the spiritual welfare of young people in the Amish church. One of the people who participated in that first meeting was a Mennonite by the name of Chris Miller from West Liberty, Ohio. So it was not just the Amish, it was also some Mennonites. They met in Hans Bontrager's house to discuss the establishment of some magazine, some journal, so that young people in the Amish church could be educated and exhorted to live holy Christian lives. And they asked Eli Bontrager if he would be willing to edit this paper. Eli Bontrager, who was one of the most widely traveled bishops in the Amish church, a very godly man, very humble man. And he said when they asked him to do this, he was so struck, he was so humbled that he said, I need to step outside the room and think about it. So he stepped over to the other room, and while he was there praying to himself, his eyes fell on a copy of Licht und Hoffnung, which was a German language journal published by someone else, not by the Mennonites. And while he was waiting, he looked through that journal, and his eyes fell on an article about Nathan and Joseph. And the author of the article said that it is better to have one person who willingly follows Christ than half a dozen people who need to be dragged in by the scruff of their necks. And he said, those words spoke to me. And so Eli Bontrager agreed to be the first editor of Herald der Wahrheit. So a short time later, he traveled to Wellman, Iowa, Kelowna, Iowa, to the home of a man named Jacob Schwarzentruber, who was a very well-educated man, educated in German. He had been a German language teacher. He went to Millersville College in Pennsylvania as a young man. He was already an elderly man by this time, but he had helped establish German language schools for the Amish in the Iowa area, in the Kelowna, Iowa area. And so Eli Bontrager, with several other people, Chris Miller and Samuel Gingrich, traveled to Kelowna, Iowa, and met in the home of Jacob Schwarzentruber. And there they decided to form a magazine, which was, they didn't know the name of it, but they said, we need to get some articles together to form a paper. They contacted John F. Funk. John F. Funk was the Mennonite editor of the earlier journal, which had been called Herald of Ohrid, Herald of Truth. But he was a Mennonite who was working in Elkhart, Indiana at the Mennonite Publishing Association. And he supported the Amish. He said, "This is a good idea. I have experience in publishing. I will help you put together this paper." And so Eli Bontrager collected some of his writings on the Holy Spirit, and there was a third person named Daniel Mast. Some of you probably know who he is. He was known as Dotty Mast in this community. He had prepared something like half a dozen articles already, writings that he had written. He didn't know where to publish them, but he was one of the founders of the Herald of Ohrid. He sent his writings to Eli Bontrager. So Bontrager and Schwartentruber went to Elkhart and met with John F. Funk. John Funk said, "Why don't you call it Herald of Ohrid? Herald of Truth," which had been the name of his journal 50 years before. Hence the name Herald der Wahrheit, Herald of Truth. They decided that half of the journal would be in German, half in English. And they had discussions about why German and why English. And this is apropos of Raymond Wagler, because Raymond Wagler was a strong proponent of the German language. This testifies to that. He was editor of this journal for 15 years, writing in German. He believed that there was a value in writing in German. In 1916, Eli Bontrager, who had been named the first editor of Herald der Wahrheit, wrote an essay on the importance of the German language. And he said, "If we have our church services in the Amish church in German, shouldn't we be able to read German? Shouldn't we be able to write German? Shouldn't we be able to study the Bible in German?" That was his argument. But he also made a caveat. He said, "English will continue to influence us." And there is a slight hint that maybe English will crowd out German eventually. Eli Bontrager and Jacob Schwartentruber were extremely perceptive men. They did not elevate German language as a holy language. They just said, "This is our mother language, and if we speak it in church, we should know the German language. We should study the Bible in German. We should be able to write German poetry." By the way, Jacob Schwartentruber, Eli Bontrager, and a third man, Samuel Gingrich, were all poets. They wrote poetry in both English and German. And this is not just doggerel. This is high-quality poetry. And if you notice the Herald of Ohrid, they decided on the front cover of Herald of Ohrid, there would always be a German poem, as well as the editorial. And there were several poems written for the first issue of Herald of Ohrid in January of 1912. No one knows who wrote the poems. They were anonymous. But it was either Eli J. Bontrager or Samuel Gingrich, probably, because they were both accomplished poets, high-quality poets. So that was how the Herald of Ohrid was formed. They decided to have a 24-page format with a small format. That's why it was called the Kleine Herald, or the Klein Herald in Pennsylvania Dutch. And over the life of this paper, the number of pages changed because of economic crises. In fact, in 1956, Dad wrote an editorial in which he said, "This is the last issue of Herald of Ohrheit." It's probably the most emotional editorial that he wrote. "This is the last issue of Herald of Ohrheit. Because financially, we simply do not have any money. Someone gave some money. Because as I go through the old editions of Herald of Ohrheit, 2 weeks later, there was an edition of Herald of Ohrheit again. And I suspect that there were people from this congregation, from this community, who sent in money. And I also suspect that Raymond Wagler was one of them who did it. So the Herald of Ohrheit was founded in 1912. Eli J. Bontrager and Jacob Swartzentruber were the first two editors. They did not have a separate English and German editor at that time. 2 years later, they decided to separate the editorship, appointing an English editor who turned out to be Jonas Miller from Grantsville, Maryland. He was the first English editor. He served the longest. He was editor for 32 years as the English editor of Herald of Ohrheit. And the German editor became Samuel Güngerich. His name was Güngerich with the German umlaut. Today it is anglicized to Güngerich. Samuel Güngerich was a remarkable man, highly talented. He was 78 years old when he became the editor. Can you imagine? 78 years old. Hey, here's a new job for you. And so he was editor until 1929. Do you know what? He lived in the Kelowna area. When he was 91 years old, he would go over to the University of Iowa Dental School, Medical School, the dental department, because he still had his original teeth. And he went over there, and the dentists would collect their students around him and say, "Look at this guy. He's 91 years old, and he has all of his original teeth." It was quite a sight. And I am sure that he enjoyed the experience because he was very adept at dealing with people. One of the most significant leaders in the Amish church, he was not ordained, he was not a minister, but he was a publisher. And he had a bookshop in Kelowna. And in 1890, he had put together this book, which is called the Liedersammlung. The Amish people in America, for the most part, used the Ausbund, which was a larger book, a thicker book. Samuel Güngerich, because he was adept in German, put together a collection of hymns in this book. And this is, by the way, the book that was used by the Amish communities here in Reno County. This is the Liedersammlung. It's the small book. Or it's often called the Güngerich book, because he is the one who put together this hymnal. And if you remember, the first hymn in the book is the Loblied, which is sung in every Amish congregation in America, in every meeting, the Loblied, one of the most powerful hymns ever penned. The words are absolutely incredible. And the first issue that Dad edited for the German part of Herald der Wahrheit, he used the ancient text of the Loblied and made a commentary on how the Loblied had been reduced to four stanzas, just to indicate the significance of the Loblied for the Amish community. Now, we've talked a little bit about the formation of the Herald der Wahrheit. Another very important figure in the formation of that paper was Dan Mast, Daniel Mast, Dottie Mast, as we know him in this community. He came out here to Kansas from Holmes County, Ohio in 1886, spent the rest of his life here, had a very powerful ministry, but in connection with Herald der Wahrheit, he wrote more articles for Herald der Wahrheit than any other person. In fact, his writings for Herald der Wahrheit were collected in a book called Anweisung zur Seligkeit. People felt that his writings were so powerful that they decided to collect his writings in a work called Anweisung zur Seligkeit. And later, people translated these articles and published them in a book called Salvation Full and Free, which has gone through a number of editions because people to this day still read this book, Salvation Full and Free by Daniel Mast. And he, of course, was local. He moved from Holmes County, Ohio to Reno County, Kansas, because Kansas was a dry state. He was very much concerned about the state of young people's behavior among the Amish in Holmes County, Ohio. He wanted to move. He had 9 children when he moved. His wife died just before he was planning on moving, so he buried her, moved out here with 8 children. The 1 child went to Virginia. And so he was here with 8 children and married again. He ultimately married 4 times. Died in 1930. Had a tremendous ministry here. He was known as the tobacco preacher or the spirit-filled preacher, because he spoke out on important issues for young people. He was very much concerned about the spiritual life of young people. And that is reflected in his writings. You can read these essays in Salvation Full and Free and get a sense of how passionately he was concerned about the faith. We can say that that was an affirmation that what I am saying is true. That's an exclamation point to affirm that. Another very important thing that Daniel Mast did here in this community was help establish a Sunday school. Now, the Amish, and by this time, the Amish community here was quite well established. Abraham Knisley and Bishop C.E. Bontrager were the first people to come to this community. And then later there was a man named Roman Headings from Pennsylvania. The first marriage in this community was Noah Yoder. And he was married over on the what is now colloquially known as Yoder Road. It's where I believe Clifford Knisley lives there now or wherever. Daniel Mast decided that there should be Sunday school to help people learn German and help people learn the Bible. And so the first Sunday school was established about a mile west of here, on this road, in 1887. But there were some people, some Amish people, who were opposed to Sunday school, so they discontinued. You know, the Amish have their church services every other Sunday in people's homes. So on the off Sundays, some people decided to have Sunday schools, but in 1888 or 9, the Sunday school was established in this house along this road about a mile west of here and continued until Daniel Mast's death. So he was the one who established the Sunday school here in this community. So I have here also something I want to show you about Daniel Mast. This is from his collection. I don't know, this isn't very very powerful show and tell, but this is the Gospel Herald. And I have the edition here from 1919. I have the whole collection of Gospel Herald, published by Mennonite Publishing House. And Daniel Mast read this paper. He was deeply influenced by the writers in Gospel Herald. Suffice it to say that Harold der Voorhout was in spirit and in fact very close to Gospel Herald at that time. The Mennonites and the Amish were very, very close together. I cannot emphasize that enough. If you read the Herald der Voorhout of 1920, you can go to Gospel Herald of 1920 and find many of the same statements. I would say that the writers of Herald der Voorhout were largely derivative, but I think that is also characteristic of Anabaptist thought. So I'd like to move now more specifically to Raymond Wagler. And those of you who don't know have probably gathered that I am Raymond Wagler's son. He was my father. And I have decided to do some research on his life by reading his editorials in Herald der Voorhout. Get a sense of who this man was. And I have been struck. He was a remarkable man, and I have collected a number of things from his life. This is a book that he received when he was 11 years old in Sunday school for memorizing all the books of the Bible. A nice little book, a gift. I have lots of other little elements of his life that I have saved. I have tried to save as much as I possibly can. For example, this is his penmanship notebook from his grade school. And notice how carefully he wrote. They repeated the same words over and over. And he also drew a nice little picture of a fish. He was something of an artist. He drew this. I found this in his papers. And this is his geography lesson from grade 4 at Fairmont School. This is for perfect attendance in 1922. He did not miss a day of school. And of course, his sister Orpha could attest to the fact that they loved school. They loved school and treasured every day. Raymond also liked to travel. In fact, I have asked myself the question, on what basis was Raymond Wagler asked to be the editor of Herald der Wahrheit? I do not know. He was not ordained in the ministry. He did not write a lot. I am going through all the issues of Herald der Wahrheit from 1940 to 1950 to see what he wrote. He did not write much. But I suspect he was selected in part because of something that he and his brother Willie did in the 1930s. He and his brother Willie wanted to make a trip around the world. They saved their money for 1 year on the farm here east of Partridge so that they could make a trip around the world, which was very unusual for Americans in general, to say nothing of two Amish boys. But they did that. They went to Baghdad, and then they ran out of money. So they didn't make it around the world. They had to come back, and that's part of that story. But they wrote letters to the budget, the Sugar Creek budget, every week. And these letters were published, and people learned to know about Raymond and Willie Wagler through the account of their travels to the Holy Lands and to the Middle East and to Germany, to Europe. This is a letter that he wrote when they were in New York City, just before they took off. And I have a number of his old postcards. I was amused. He wrote a postcard when they were in Italy, and he told his sister Orpha, please cash that $5 check that we were supposed to get for selling the grain. $5 check. And he thought of that while they were in Rome, Italy. Says something about his management skills, I presume. Well, this little trip earned them quite a bit of exposure in the Amish church. People knew about the Wagler brothers and their trip to the Holy Lands. That was then published as a booklet by Raymond and Willie Wagler. And it was widely distributed among the Amish population. I suspect that was one reason why the editorial board thought of selecting Raymond Wagler as the editor. I do not know. I have no record of that. What were Raymond's concerns as he wrote Herald der Wahrheit? He was a product of Daniel Mast. Many times in his editorials, he would quote sermons by Daniel Mast, Dottie Mast. How he remembered them, I do not know, because Daniel Mast had died 15 years before. But Dad still remembered the messages given by Dottie Mast. He was also strongly influenced by Noah D. Mast, who was the son of Daniel Mast and Raymond Wagler's father-in-law. So the Mast influence was very powerful with Raymond Wagler in terms of his mentality, in terms of his concerns, in terms of how he thought about the status of the Amish church, in terms of his love for the German language. A number of other things that are quite striking when you read Raymond Wagler's editorials. He had a passion for missions. As you know, the Old Order Amish did not officially engage in mission work per se. But Raymond Wagler wrote a lot about us being missionaries where we are. Be a missionary right here at home. He said when you travel on buses or trains, other people will visit with you, talk to them about their relationship to Jesus. And I believe the seeds of later formal mission work were planted by Daniel Mast and by people such as Jacob Miller, who was the bishop in the Western District, and Noah Mast and Dottie Mast in the Eastern District. I believe that the seeds for mission work were planted by those people. Raymond Wagler was still carrying on that tradition. But along with the passion for mission work and reaching out to people who do not know Christ, he also had a very strong sense of discipline in the church. The word sin, I have checked this carefully, the German word Sünde, appears often in his writings, I would say in every editorial. This is characteristic also of the Amish approach. We are sinful people. We need to repent of our sins, come to Jesus and ask for forgiveness. And sinning is still a characteristic of the church. Raymond Wagler strongly advocated being part of a visible church. He talked about the visible church and the invisible church. You need to be part of a visible church which has discipline, which has rules. It establishes boundaries. Many editorials talk about that. We have boundaries and rules. In 1954, he announced in his editorial that he was going to publish a long poem, and he apologized for the length of the poem. It's so long that it won't fit into one issue, so it's going to cover two issues. The name of that poem was The Walk in the World. The Walk in the World. It is an allegorical poem. I do not know its origins, because he did not indicate who had written it or where he had gotten it. Walk in the World, and it talks about a person who says, you know, I can walk with the world even though I'm in the church. And that's the whole sense of the poem. It's a long poem. You can read it if you want. If you want to go over to North Newton and go into the archives and find it. And it talks about how this person in the church decides to walk with the world and the danger he encounters. And he speaks openly about tobacco and alcohol. He speaks about adornment. He talks about dress. We can walk with the world and combine that with the world. And then he points out at the end, the poem, the author of the poem says, and you know what happens? We become the world. So Raymond Wagler was very much concerned about the concept of non-conformity to the world, which is an Amish notion that used to be part of the Mennonite understanding of Christianity too. Another very important element was his concept of non-resistance, non-violence, Wehrlosigkeit. He talks about that many times, as did Dottie Mast and other writers in the Herald. He mentions that when he was in Germany, he met with Mennonite families, And he was very disturbed by some of the Mennonite families there who were militaristic. They were supporting German military armaments. He and Willie were very disturbed by this. And he pointed out in an editorial that the German soldiers had on their belt buckles written the words, Gott mit uns, God with us, as they were slaughtering innocent civilians and marching across all of Europe, destroying the country. God is with us. Dad found that reprehensible. That is not the way Christians should live. This takes on additional poignance in the fact that a Mennonite scholar by the name of Benjamin Goossen has just published a book. It's his doctoral dissertation, where he talks about the Mennonite collaboration with the Nazis in Germany and in Paraguay during the course of World War II and after. This is a highly researched scholarly work, but it will probably make us reevaluate how we view Mennonite history, because it is a shameful picture of what happened in World War II. Raymond Wagler saw that. He heard Hitler give a speech in Germany, and he was very disturbed. He said, this guy is a charlatan. He's deceiving people, and did not like it. Another thing that Raymond Wagler emphasized was the importance of service locally. Be compassionate. I remember one Sunday afternoon, the Sunday school building, when I was growing up, was just a half mile down the road here, that house on the corner. And after Sunday school, of course, you did not have a meal. People went home for their meals. In ordinary church services, you had a meal in the home where the church service was held. But on Sunday school Sundays, you went home after Sunday school. And we brought our lunch along one Sunday, and we took a horse and buggy to Nickerson, which is quite a trek when you have a horse and buggy. We went up there to visit a woman who was paralyzed in bed. Mom had read about this person and decided that we should go visit her. So we went up after church services to visit her. We read scripture to her and had prayer with her. This Amish family going to visit an English woman. Raymond Wagler believed in doing that kind of thing. Another point that I would like to make about Raymond Wagler's opinions, while he was for very strong discipline in the church, I have emphasized that, he believed there should be discipline in the church, there should be rules, and they should be enforced. Nevertheless, he was very generous in terms of understanding Christianity as more than just being Amish. Christianity is Christianity. The Amish are one part of that group. The first testimony I heard my father give, I was just a little boy sitting in church. I was sitting on his lap. During the church service, I had a stainless steel bolt with a nut on it. That was my plaything. I would turn that on and off during the service. And if you sit through a service for 2.5 hours, that's quite a few screws on the bolt. But I was sitting there on his lap trying to entertain myself otherwise, because I was too small really to listen to what the preacher was saying. I mean, even for adults sometimes that's hard, isn't it? Well, no, I didn't say that. In the Amish church service, ministers always testify to the correctness of the sermon that was preached, because they have multiple ministers there. And the other ministers have to testify that the word was preached according to the word of God and nothing erroneous was said. Well, sometimes they will ask someone in the audience to give testimony. Well, that happened during this particular service. They asked my father, Raymond Wagler, to give testimony. And of course, you can imagine the shock that went through my heart. I was here, and my father was to speak before this august company. And so I still remember what he said. He talked about an incident when he was a little boy, a seven-year-old boy, in Ford County, Kansas, where one day, one Sunday afternoon, they were visited by a neighbor. And he said that a little boy named Orville Hinkle had just died. And he said, Orville Hinkle gave a message to Raymond and Willie Wagler. You Amish boys follow Christ for the rest of your lives. This was an English boy telling these two Amish boys that you are to follow Jesus Christ the rest of your lives. That stuck with Raymond Wagler. I am told that he told that story in this congregation several times afterwards. I do not know, but that is what I am told. That incident stayed with him the rest of his life. And remember, this was an English person, not an Amishman, telling him to follow Christ the rest of his life. Another incident. When I was 7 years old, we had a visitor one Saturday afternoon. He was a short, squat, Slavic guy named Peter Denica, who came from Chicago, Illinois, drove his car down to our farm, and he stayed there Saturday afternoon and evening with us. He went to church with us on Sunday morning. Peter Denica. This Belarus evangelical Christian who established a mission called Slavic Gospel Association. He stayed at our place. He went to church with us the next morning. I remember sitting in the back seat of the buggy with him the next day, Sunday afternoon, and he was telling the stories of all these persecuted Christians in the Soviet Union. I didn't know where that was or what it was, but these Christians were being persecuted. Peter Wagler, when he died, made it clear that so much money should be donated to Slavic Gospel Association. After his death, that was his will. And of course, little did he realize that later in life, I would work with Peter Denica. I worked with Peter Denica Jr. for many years. We became close friends. And my life has been closely tied to the country of his origin. Another incident happened within about 6 months after this, when John and Joe Overholt, who were my father's cousins from Hartville, Ohio, they visited us, And I remember Joe Overholt sitting on our couch telling the story of how he had been to a certain country, and he stood on a place called Red Square, cobblestone square. There was a huge wall in front of him. And then there was a mausoleum with a dead person lying in it. And this was an atheistic country. And they persecute Christians. And I remember how impressed I was when Joe Overholt said, I stood on that square with my Bible in my hand and I prayed for all the persecuted Christians in this country. I didn't know the name of the country. It was the Soviet Union. It was Russia. It was Red Square. I have taken many people to tours of Red Square in later years. I know that country very well. So there are some ironies in Raymond Wagler's life. He wrote much about the persecuted Christian Mennonite people in Russia, and he wrote a lot about Paraguay and the persecuted Christians who had to flee the Soviet Union and go to Paraguay. So there were many times in his editorials, and he included articles from German magazines, from Paraguay and from Canada, because many of the Mennonites who emigrated from the Soviet Union went to Canada. And they maintained the German language. Raymond Wagler received at least 5 German magazines, published mostly by the Mennonite Brethren, Mennonites from the Soviet Union, Russian Mennonites, the Rundschau, the Wahrheitsfreude and Liebesfreude, and several others, Evangelische Posaune. We used to get these magazines, and Dad would read them, and he would select articles from them and use them in Herald der Wahrheit. So his diapason was wider than just the Amish community. He reached out to other Christian groups, but most closely with the Mennonites, of course. And then, of course, the great irony that his daughter lived in Paraguay for many years, and his son lived in Russia for many years. These were the countries that he most wrote about outside of the United States. Do not ask me, please, how many of the Amish readers were really interested in Russia or in Paraguay. But Raymond Wagler was. Well, I have carried on too long here, but I just want to close by reminding you. What will people say about you 50 years after you have died? What will they say? What kind of legacy will we leave? Will it be something that uplifts the church, make people be better Christians? I hope so. There's much more that could be said about Raymond Wagler and the Herald der Wahrheit, but our time is up. However, if you have a question, I'd be happy to answer. You have any questions? Yes. Yes. Paul.
He preached for the last 15 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The reason I asked that question is that I had heard.
No.
Sometimes they were kind of
Yes, yes.
Yes. You are saying Paul Wayne Dietrich.
Yes.
He was ordained at 65. Okay. A very strange yes. age to be yeah. asked to do that.
Yes.
But there's this historical incident that would explain.
Yes. Did you have something more to say, Paul? Or? Well, I know that he preached, because one time after he had preached, a visiting minister from the East was there in attendance, and he complained during the Tsagnus that Dottie Mast had used too many English words. I had too viel Englische Worte used. And Dottie Mast responded by saying, "Well, ich denk, Kust is on English, but." Well, I do appreciate your patience. And did you want to come and close?